Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's a pleasure to have you aboard this edition of Africa Link. It's Tuesday, May the 22nd. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to leave us your thoughts and feedback.
Now, coming up, Catholic bishops in Nigeria are protesting the conflict between Fulani herdsmen and farmers after two of their priests and 17 worshippers were allegedly killed by the cattle herders.
It is really a turning point. The Catholic Church asked openly the president to resign a couple of days after the killing.
Opposition parties in Burundi say they will contest the outcome of a referendum extending presidential term limit. Is there any hope, and what does this result mean for the country's future?
Burundi is really going in a dangerous path because the opposition is now hopeless. If hopeless people are fighting, they are going really to come with all they have.
And further abroad, we will hear of an Australian archbishop who was convicted for covering up child sex abuses.
We have these and much more, but before that, let's hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Kapal with the DW News. The number of confirmed Ebola cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo has risen to 28, including 4 deaths, the country's government announced today. A total of 51 suspected cases have been recorded. According to Tarek Yajarevich, spokesman for the World Health Organization, the vaccination campaign to counter the spread is well underway in the town of Mbandaka, but because of logistical problems, it has yet to start in the remote area of Bikoro, where the current outbreak originated.
Getting in vaccines, getting in freezers, having enough of fuel so these freezers can function in the area where you don't really have electricity. You need to have vaccination teams to be trained so they know exactly what they need to do, how to get a consent, how to define eligibility of contact and contact of contacts.
Burkina Faso security forces killed 3 suspected Islamist militants and arrested one more this morning in an operation in the capital, Ouagadougou. One officer was killed and 4 others wounded in a fighting in Ouagadougou's Ragnongo neighborhood, the police said. The Sahel state has been in the grip of a jihadist insurgency since 2016. Swiss authorities have raided multiple sites as part of a money laundering probe tied to Angola's sovereign wealth fund. The operation came after the son of Angola's former president, José Eduardo dos Santos, was charged in Angola with siphoning off 1.3 billion euros when he ran the country's sovereign wealth fund. José Filomeno dos Santos had been appointed by his father to head the over 4 billion euro fund in 2013. Nearly 400 African migrants were found by a search and rescue team in the Sahara on the Niger-Algerian border last week, the International Office of Migration said. The IOM revealed that it has carried out 18 such rescue missions since the start of the year, saving 3,000 people. Niger has become one of the main routes for African migrants heading north to the Mediterranean coast in a hope of crossing to Europe. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. At the International Criminal Court, ICC, in The Hague, Netherlands, Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad Malki today called on prosecutors to open an investigation into Israel's settlements in the Palestinian territories.
I want to be clear that Palestine took this step due to the intensification of the rate and severity of the crimes committed against our people, including settlement expansion, land grab and the illegal exploitation of our natural resources, as well as the brutal and calculated targeting of unarmed protesters, particularly in the Gaza Strip.
Israel urged the ICC to reject the referral. The ICC has been conducting a preliminary probe since 2015 into alleged crimes in the Palestinian territories by both sides in the Gaza conflict. Tuesday's referral could speed up a decision on whether to open a full-blown investigation against Israel. Australian Archbishop Philip Wilson was found guilty on Tuesday of concealing child sex abuse by a priest. He is the most senior Catholic in the world to be convicted on such a charge. Wilson is expected to be sentenced by the court in June. He faces a maximum penalty of 2 years in jail. For more news and information, download the DWA app from Google Play Store or from iTunes. I'm Christina Krippal.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura, welcoming those of you who are listening to us live on Facebook. Feel free to share your thoughts and share this audio as well. We start off in Nigeria. The Catholic Church is calling for a mass protest across Nigeria at a burial ceremony of two priests and 17 worshippers who were allegedly killed by Fulani herdsmen. The church has also asked President Muhammadu Buhari to resign for failing to tackle the conflict between farmers and herdsmen.
Now, the two Catholic priests and 17 worshippers were laid to rest today in Benue State, and DW's Catherine Gensler was there. I started by asking her to describe the burial ceremony and which politician attended it.
Here in Benue State, there are thousands of people joining this burial ceremony. Quite a number of bishops are here as well. And Nigerian Vice President Yemi Osinbajo, he just came, and also the governor of Benue State. So people are very much worried about the security situation, not here at the venue, but in general here in Benue State.
Now, Catherine, how much attention has this burial ceremony and the planned protest by the Catholic Church drawn on this conflict between the Fulani herdsmen and the farmers?
It is really a turning point. The Catholic Church asked openly the president to resign a couple of days after the killing. And last week they announced this big ceremony here and also church services all over Nigeria. So there's a lot of attention.
This planned protest will be led by the head of the Catholic Church there in Nigeria, Papa Nuncio. And now you are basically saying that they are calling for the resignation of President Muhammadu Buhari. How likely is this going to happen?
It is not likely that it happens. But the Catholic Bishops' Conference, they already had a meeting with the president in February. During this meeting, they already said that they are not satisfied with his performance. And with the call for his resignation, it's another step. Still, nobody expects him to resign at the moment, but the church really is putting quite a lot of pressure on him and on the government in Nigeria.
Do you think the whole of Nigeria was very shocked by the alleged killing of those two Catholic priests and 17 other Catholic Church members in Benue State, where you currently are?
Here, people are still really shocked. I talked to a couple of people joining this ceremony. Everybody is still shocked after almost 4 weeks, and people are still very angry. They are especially angry because they say the government doesn't do anything about their security. It's not about Abuja or the state capitals, but it's especially about the people in the villages. People are really, really angry here.
Catherine Gensler speaking to me earlier from Benue State at the burial ceremony of those two Catholic priests.
And Abu, our Facebook page is very busy. Emeka Obi says, no security in Nigeria. The world knows it. Buhari should go.
Thanks for all your responses there. We won't be able to get to all of them due to the massive amount of comments and the few amount of time that we have. Anyways, let me take one here from Nuibe Stanley, who says, I am not Nigerian, but it bothers me how the government has been handling this issue.
Yeah, so a lot. Keep on writing and giving us your comments on this issue. But now we head to Australia, where a high court has found a Catholic archbishop guilty of concealing child sexual abuse by the clergy in the 1970s.
Philip Wilson, who is the Archbishop of Adelaide, becomes the most senior Catholic in the world to be charged and convicted of the offence. Eddie Micah Jr. with this report.
A Newcastle magistrate found the Archbishop of Adelaide, Philip Wilson, guilty of covering up abuse by the now-deceased paedophile priest Jim Fletcher. 67-year-old Wilson is the most senior Catholic in the world to be convicted of concealing abuse. Among the victims of filed complaints against the Archbishop were Daniel Finan and Peter Gogeti. They accused Wilson of doing nothing to stop the abuse.
This bloke had done something in 1976, which was the year that I was born. My life would have been a lot different than what it is today.
Fletcher was already abusing me by then, but Wilson could have stopped it. He could have got me help. We are talking about children being sexually abused, and the Archbishop knew. That, to me, demands a custodial sentence.
In a damning judgment, Magistrate Robert Stone told the court the accused well knew he had information that could have been of assistance to the police, but he wanted to protect the church and its reputation. It's a verdict that some legal experts believe sets an important precedent and may lead to more prosecutions elsewhere. Wilson's conviction comes just weeks after an Australian court ordered Vatican Treasurer Cardinal George Pell to stand trial on similar charges. Pell has pleaded not guilty, and the Vatican has granted him leave to defend his case.
Eddie Michael Jr. with that report.
Back to the African continent, Burundi's opposition leader Agathon Rwasa says he will contest last week's results, allowing President Nkurunziza to extend his time in power. 73% of voters voted yes in the referendum, which the opposition and right groups said took place in a climate of fear and repression.
The referendum came 3 years after Nkurunziza won a controversial third term as president during a 2015 election, which was boycotted by the opposition. To shed more light on this, we are now joined by my colleague Fred Muvunyi. To start off, does the opposition stand any chance should they contest these results?
The question should be actually more about how independent is the constitutional court in Burundi. This is the same court that actually approved or endorsed President Nkurunziza to run for a third term in 2015. So I'm not sure if this court is going to rule in favor of the opposition. That's number one. Number two, we have also to ask ourselves whether the opposition has facts, because this is a court. They are saying that the government intimidated the voters but do they have facts? That's my worry. It could be that happened, but do they have facts? And that's what the court needs.
Now, Fred, you also wrote an opinion piece on our homepage, DW Africa, condemning the West for turning a blind eye on Burundi. Do you really believe the West has a solution or even cares about it?
If the West wanted to change anything in Africa or in a country like Burundi, yes, they can do something. But I'm afraid they're not interested anymore. They have got their own problems. They have got Russia and Turkey. They have the US has got Syria. So they're not interested in Africa anymore. So I think it's time for Africans actually to stand up and take the matters into their hands and do something.
That looks like a very dim picture, which actually brings me to my question, what does this mean for Burundi's future?
I think Burundi is really going in dangerous path, if I may say, because the opposition is now hopeless. The hope they had, you know, thought that the round table negotiations will yield into something, but now it's not possible anymore. Nkurunziza has changed the constitution. It's there. He's going to be in power as long as he wants. So for them, if hopeless people are fighting, they are going really to come with all they have got. And I don't think it's diplomacy. They are not going to fight with diplomacy. They are not going to fight by being on ballot paper. They are going to fight with their weapons they have got.
Fred Muvunyi from DW Africa Link.
Now let's take you back to our top story. That is the Catholic Church in Nigeria urging President Buhari to resign after two of their priests were killed in Benue State. A response here from Chipire Kurende says, why isn't the government doing anything about it? Something fishy is at play here, making reference there to the conflict between the Fulani herdsmen and farmers.
Yes, and Chinyere Ezaife says this is a very good development of the Catholic Church and it will put more pressure on the political system to wake up and act as a matter of urgency.
And those are all the responses we have for you. Keep them coming on Africa Link.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Still to come on this program, blogging as a way of livelihood. These Kenyan bloggers mix passion with business.
I didn't intend it to be a career. I just started blogging because I wanted to share my recipes with my friends. And with time, it just grew into a brand of its own.
We will also get to hear why relations between US and Europe are getting tense. But before that, we head to West Africa. Corruption in the media has always cast doubt on its independence and credibility. But in countries where journalists are lowly paid or paid peanuts, the temptation to take bribes or handouts is very high.
In Ghana, the media has come under serious scrutiny due to rampant corruption. There is now a major campaign which has been launched in Accra to forge the way forward. Isaac Kaleji reports.
Ghana has a robust media landscape since 1992, when it returned into constitutional rule. There are over 500 media outlets comprising radio, TV and print. Despite this, there are concerns about lack of professionalism and independence as expressed by Jana Pintin, the chair of the Media Commission.
Today we have the freedom, sadly not the independence. Too many journalists are in hock to other interests, either singing the tunes of their political masters or their business masters.
However, the most worrying trend which the public is speaking about is corruption, mainly because reporters and journalists remain underpaid. Journalists are now said to be easily influenced by politicians and businesses with special interests. One organization championing the fight against media corruption is the Media Foundation for West Africa. Its programs officer, Abigail Labi, says the situation is dire.
We've picked up a lot of reports about the workings of the media. There have been instances where the media have had to kill stories that favor one politician or one group over the other. There have also been instances where we have journalists covering events, almost harassing event organizers for what in our parlance we would call solly, you know, and all of that. So we've had those instances.
The solly Labi is referring to is money some journalists demand or are given while covering news events in order to publish stories. Labi is worried that is ruining the media's reputation and creating mistrust among its audience. Interestingly, some journalists I spoke to do not consider the request for money at events before publishing stories as corruption.
Because you know, in Ghana, gifts are given. It's no big deal in Ghana. We are not seeking to justify bribery or corruption. Because I go to events and some of the stories are even critical.
I am paid for what I do, but this thing or this habit of organizers giving reporters something for their TNT, I don't see anything wrong with that.
In light of this, DW Academy is leading a campaign against media corruption in Ghana. It will kick off on Wednesday with a forum among media owners and journalists to discuss how corruption is ruining the media industry. Labi says the initiative is vital to bring about change.
If the media, who is supposed to be the watchdog, is not incorruptible, then you almost don't have the moral right to want to report on somebody or public office holders who we think that they are sometimes corrupt.
That's Labi, Program Officer, Media Foundation for West Africa, winding up that report by Isaac Kaleji.
And a response here from journalist Mike King. He says, we are not in quotes there, any under serious scrutiny. It is still a free media landscape with regulation from the National Media Commission.
But someone differs, and that is Giaba Boache, who says in Ghana today, the media are more corrupt than the politicians. And he goes on to say, journalists are being paid to report false stories, and those who refuse to do so are assaulted.
And Kwasi Amoa Bonan seems to have the reasons why journalists are corrupt. He says, some of the journalists are living beyond their means and nobody can question them.
That's another outlook.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Africa on the move.
Now, some positive story here. While growing up, you probably had a little diary where you wrote down all your secrets. Well, some decided to stop keeping that diary under their pillow and instead chose to share their little secrets and passions with the world, what is now referred to as blogging, or in the case of video, known as vlogging.
In Kenya, not only do they write and take pictures about themselves and their day, some document their days in videos and share them on YouTube. Sounds fun. But can one make a living from this? Is it sustainable? Rhoda Othiambo caught up with two vloggers who quit formal employment to follow their passion.
I'm Mandy Saro, aka Miss Mandy, and I'm a media personality and a food blogger.
When vlogging took off in other parts of the world, it was seen as something suspicious in Kenya. Most YouTubers were viewed as a nuisance who were busy trying to destroy a rival's image or that of corporations. But now things are slowly changing as vloggers and bloggers demonstrate that you can make a career out of your videos and posts if you're good.
6 years ago, people were not making money from what I'm doing, so it's a very new career. And when my mom started seeing me on TV and magazines, she's like, oh, maybe this is kind of like serious. So now she's like, she sat me down and said, so tell me exactly what you're doing. Because my mom didn't understand. I was running all day in heels and makeup and going to parties, and she just did not understand. But I told her, mom, you need to educate yourself, you need to learn.
Renowned fashion stylist Sylvia Njoki runs a blog called Style by Sylvia. The mother of one who studied food science and technology while at uni says she quit her job after a year when she realized that she was no longer happy. After that, she used her savings to go to a summer fashion school in London, and when she came back to Kenya, everything fell right into place.
I had to wear a lab coat all day. I couldn't wear makeup, I couldn't wear earrings, I had to cover my hair, you know, because of the food law and the food standards. I never felt happy, and I was like, life is too short and I just want to be happy.
Njoki says using the internet as a source of income has helped her grow more as a person by sharing what she loves with the world.
When I wake up and I'm tired because I've been shooting the previous day, I feel so much more content. They say that if you do something you love, you never have to work for a day in your life. And every day I'm doing something that I love and getting paid for it, traveling the world, doing something that I love, and I don't think there's any greater joy.
Another blogger, Kaluhi Adagala, who runs a blog called Kaluhi's Kitchen, also quit her job as a financial advisor 5 years ago. Kaluhi tells DW that sharing her diary with not only Kenyans but the world has enabled her to interact with renowned chefs globally and also sit at their table to enjoy their cuisine. She then uses these opportunities to market the Kenyan cuisine.
I didn't intend it to be a career. I just started blogging because I wanted to share my recipes with my friends, and with time it just grew into a brand of its own.
Both Kaluhi and Sylvia are walking brands. Some people in Kenya might assume that they are not serious because they're all about selling their own lifestyles, but their blogs demonstrate the amount of effort they put into their work. They both have huge followings on social media. So how many Kenyans have penetrated the internet? Data from the Bloggers Association of Kenya, or BAKE, shows that Kenya has about 24,000 blogs that are both active, dead, and inactive. BAKE chairman Kennedy Kachwanya attributes this to a lack of commitment by bloggers in keeping their audience up to speed with the events they are promoting.
There are people who start blogging and then within a few months, if they find out that it's not an easy thing, then the blogs become dormant. But in active sense, the blogs which are very active, our number at the moment point at around 3,800 or something like that. And that includes the guys who do video blogs, vlogs. And when you get in, it's more democratic than our normal other economic sectors. So I can shake her hand, tell her she a queen, she made something of herself. Now he catch feelings, she account shillings, top billing,
watching a private jet, get down on your knees and praise. Those beats from Fena Gitu talking about women making it wraps up that report by Rhoda Othiambo.
And a quick update to our top story of today, which is the Catholic church protest in Nigeria on the conflict between Fulani herdsmen and farmers. President Muhammad Buhari has released a message on Twitter saying that we must not allow anyone to stoke religious conflict and plunge our communities into bloodletting. On our part, as your government, we will continue to do everything in our power to protect the lives and properties of all Nigerians and ensure peace and harmony in their country. That's a message from President Muhammad Buhari.
So, of course, you are free also to give us your thoughts and feedback, what you think about that.
Focus Europe.
For Europe's most powerful politicians, the United States' withdrawal from the Iran deal shows how Donald Trump has no hesitation in dismissing European interest and transatlantic concerns.
Relations between the US and the European Union are tense, with the possibility of more problems ahead. Terry Schultz reports from Brussels that EU leaders are at the end of their tether.
Pulling out of the nuclear deal with Iran and threatening sanctions against European companies doing business there was the last straw. The European Union has officially lost its patience with trying to be friends with Donald Trump.
Someone could even think, with friends like that, who needs enemies?
That's the famously blunt European Council President Donald Tusk, who went even further at an EU summit in the Bulgarian capital Sofia. Tusk called Trump's behavior capricious assertiveness.
Europe should be grateful by President Trump, because thanks to him, we have got rid of all illusions. He has made us realize that if you need a helping hand, you will find one at the end of your arm.
Julian Barnes-Dacey with the European Council on Foreign Relations says while this episode stings, the EU needs to play the long game.
Oh, it's deeply insulting and it's a real affront to any sense of European sovereignty, but the Europeans are not going to sacrifice or risk the security and economic interests that are tied to the transatlantic relationship for the nuclear deal.
But the post-Trump period is years away, as far as anyone knows. And in the near term, there's the distinct possibility things will get worse, not better. By June 1st, Trump will announce whether he really will put tariffs on steel imports coming from Europe under a special mechanism that identifies them as a security risk to U.S. industry. And sanctions on European companies reimposed when Trump pulled out of the Iran deal will start kicking in. The last ambassador the U.S. had in the European Union post, Tony Gardner, who served under President Barack Obama, was just in Brussels testifying on U.S.-EU relations at the European Parliament. In an exclusive interview with DW, Gardner said he's empathetic with Brussels and encouraged the EU to stick up for itself and to stick together.
The EU is an ally, and it's something that we tend to forget. Some countries of the EU have been trying to get, special deals, special waivers. I think that's a very dangerous path. The EU needs to stay united. It needs to send a united message to Washington. We won't negotiate with a gun to our head. That's not the way to negotiate.
There's expected to be a new ambassador on his way to Brussels soon. Gardner says his only advice to his successor is to tell the skeptics in the U.S. that the EU matters, and to tell the U.S. skeptics in Europe that the transatlantic relationship can and must get back on track.
Terry Schultz reporting from Brussels.
And Abu, also revisiting our top story and what you just mentioned, Buhari has just reacted on Twitter saying that his government will not allow religious conflict to plunge the communities into bloodletting. And of course, there are also so many other people who are talking about it. Timothy Agba says, "That's my state, Benue. Although I'm not currently in the state, but must admit that there is no Benue indigenous that is happy with Buhari."
Thanks for that very live response there. Samson Kanayo says that Buhari is a Fulani herdsman sponsor. He told President Trump that Fulani herdsmen are not armed, which means he's protecting them against the international community. Anyways, that's a comment from Samson Kanayo, not our own opinion.
And Adoema says it's a moment of sadness seeing loved ones buried in mass. He says they are forsaken by the government and we feel betrayed by the president.
Thanks for all of your responses and your company. It's been a pleasure having you aboard. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Bye for now.